Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Revolutionary Life, right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Gary, and Revolutionary Life is here every weekday night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. This is where we take a revolutionary look through a revolutionary lens at every aspect of our lives. Things are changing. Revolutionary just wants to be on the vanguard of that change. It's the reactionary that wants to hold change back. That's just the opposite. Tonight, guys, we're going back to money. Now, I've done things on economics before, and if you look back at my past presentations, you will see so. However, today I want to do a little bit more on credit, guys, on loans. Man, if you heard my last presentation on credit, on loans, and debt. Now, actually, it was on debt. And those other subjects came up in the process, of course. I asked people on that last show how many people have checked their credit score lately. I want you to remember, and I want you to step back and think. And I want you to hold on to an idea that you shouldn't have to check your credit score. You shouldn't have to borrow money to get the things that you need. And certainly if you have to borrow money, you shouldn't have to have years to pay it back. What that indicates about you is that you have no money. Relative to the things you need, you are broke, and so you borrow. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? It is encouraged in this society, our government. Don't feel like the Lone Ranger. Our government is in debt. Our government borrows money, federal, state, and local. It borrows money from those who can afford to lend the kind of money that a government needs to do its business so it don't come to you asking for money directly. They know you ain't got it. They know you broke it in the Ten Commandments, and they can tell you broke because when you need things, you have to borrow money. You have to close the gap between what you earn and what you need with loans. And every day on every way and every TV or radio station, somebody is going to talk to you about borrowing money because they know you need it. They know you ain't got none. They know the way you get the things that you need to survive is you get loans. Your basic survival needs, food, clothing, and shelter, comes through a loan. The gap. How this government feels it helps you fill the gap between what you're allowed to be paid for your labor and what you really need to be able to meet the cost it takes to live. You remember I told you that in my state there is no minimum wage calculated on the cost it takes to live. Five southern states have no minimum wage. They have no intention of holding corporations accountable for what they pay their workers. Though they know many of them do not have the cost it takes to live in their city. So rather than establish a minimum wage so nobody pays the workers of that city lower than the cost it takes to live there, they have no minimum wage at all. They could care less what you got paid for the work you did. You see, the minimum wage law is a law. It's a signal to a corporation or business that if you're going to hire people in my town, this is what it costs to live. So you don't pay a minimum to them than it takes for them to live. That's your minimum wage law. My state doesn't have such a law. It doesn't see any need for one. If you can't meet the cost of living, somehow or another, it must be your fault. If you got an 8-hour day and you still can get food stamps because you still qualify based on your yearly income, full-time work, that's because of your pay, nothing else. And so rather than lobby for you or fight for you or demand by law for you a living wage, my state has no minimum for which one can pay you to work for them. Were it not for a federal minimum wage, my town would have no minimum wage. In fact, no town in my state would be mandated to have a minimum wage. Were it not for the federal minimum wage, I would never have known a minimum wage, and nobody in this city would have. Because the state I live in does not require such a thing as a minimum amount to pay someone for their work, their labor. Obviously, they don't think there is such a need for such a thing. So my state has no minimum wage. If you're a business, that's a signal to come on down. Pay what makes you happy. Oh, by the way, there is a federal minimum wage. If the federal government would get off our back, you wouldn't have any minimum wage down here in Tennessee, in my state. So the way, so when a government, when someone with the power to demand a certain wage in their city of the people, to the people they govern, and they do not, and they have no intention to, they have a stopgap measure. They have a way for you to get by. You can borrow. You can get a loan. You can sell your future earnings today for money. Today. You can sell your future. All you need is a good credit rating. Have you checked your credit score lately? In my other presentation, I literally talked about a credit society. Since this is so prevalent, from the government being in debt to the individuals I'm speaking to, probably, in this country, are indebted. And the debt is, of course, to close the gap between what you actually earn and the things you want to buy, need to buy, even, like shelter, food and clothing, transportation, communication. Every time you borrow money, every time you correct your credit score, remember what I said, that all you're saying is I'm broke. I ain't got a dime. And I need some things. And so I'm going to use that stopgap measure given to me by my government. I am going to go and borrow some money. Now, I could go to my employer and ask for a living wage. Oh, no. My government wouldn't back that. You see, we have no minimum wage laws in my state. They don't see the need for one. Obviously. You could demand a higher wage, a cost of one that meets the cost it takes to live where you live, in the town you live in. The government could even back you on that by establishing a wage by which no wage should go under, a minimum wage. Instead, you have another route. And so tonight, here on Revolutionary Life, with your host, Gary, I want to talk to you a little bit about the loan you just took out, or trying to take out, or thinking about taking out. I believe you're moving ahead because you got that loan. I did a presentation once on money, just called it money. And I've heard people say money is the root of all evil, that kind of thing. Money corrupts and all that. Now, check this out. Money was kind of revolutionary when it first appeared on the scene. Money appeared in the trade, in the marketplace. And it made the marketplace move a lot smoother because you didn't have to bring the specific product that you wanted to trade with, that you had to trade with, to find somebody who wanted that product in order for you to trade for the things you needed. A lot of people might have wanted your product, but they didn't have what you needed. And so you spend time in the market walking around saying, does anybody want this goat for some fish? And the guy who's got the fish says, yeah, I got some fish, but I don't want no goat. And so you walk around the marketplace until you find, what do you want? And the fish guy might say, I could use some wheat to make some bread with. And so the goat guy go over to the wheat guy down the road there and say, look, I'll trade this goat for some wheat, and hopefully the wheat man will take it and trade for some of his wheat. He will take that goat, luckily, hopefully. And if he does, now the goat guy has sold his goat for some wheat, and he's going to run back to the marketplace now, to the guy with the fish. Say, hey, I got some wheat. I need some fish. Boom. Transaction taken care of in all day. On the other hand, when money was introduced into the market as a universal means of exchange, you could go to the market and trade your goat for money. With that money, you could go and buy whatever you like. Or you could go to the market with money instead of a goat. And you can walk up to the fish man, and because the fish man will take that money in exchange for those fish. Because unlike anything else you could have brought to the market, the money you brought is a universal means of exchange. Everybody accepts it from everyone else. So I'd be glad to take your cowrie shells, wampum beads. It didn't matter when money started. It could be cowrie shells. Because all it was a way to make your market move smoother. It was a universal means of exchange, and people in the market all of a sudden were able to buy and sell without being there all day, looking for somebody to buy what they want so they could get to somebody who wants what they bought, etc., etc., etc. Now, that was revolutionary. Money was a revolutionary idea. Native Americans used it. Many cultures used it. Cowrie shells, wampum beads, bands of beads, all kinds of things were used for money. Salt. In fact, some people used to get paid in salt. That's where the word salary came from. In the Latin, sal is salt, the condiment. Salary came from the word salt. So some people used to get paid in salt. It was okay with them because they could use that salt. It was worth something in the market because everybody was trying to preserve meat and that kind of thing. And so salt was valuable in season and everything. Salt was valuable. It could be traded for other things. A universal means of exchange made the market move smoothly. But what happened to money? What happened to your money? What happened to this revolutionary idea? I'll tell you what happened. Tonight, I'm telling you what happened to money. Somebody decided to try to make money off of money. You don't hear me. Money worked like grease to the wheels in the marketplace until one day somebody tried to make money off of selling money. Loaning money is where money started its perversive track downhill. Loaning money for a profit was called usury in biblical times. And a Christian, all you Christians out there, And a Christian, for the longest time, by law, by biblical law, could not engage in usury, the loaning of money for a profit to people who need it. And so the Christian church would never allow a Christian to involve themselves in the perversion of money by using it to make money. Now, unfortunately, the situation looks like this. Christians couldn't engage in usury, the loaning of money for profit. But Jews could. Now keep in mind, this was also a time when Jews could not own property. If you were identified as a Jew, of a person of Jewish faith, then you could not buy your own property. You could not purchase property. This was law. But there was no law in the Jewish faith that said they could not loan money for a profit. Find somebody in desperate need of money, offer them that money, but say, when you pay it back with interest. Christians couldn't do that. We're not allowed by biblical law. Church law. For the longest. But Jews didn't have that problem. See, guys, the Jews came into property. But check it out. If you were a king trying to outfit an army, or a farmer trying to plant a field, you might go to the Jews to borrow money. And in return, you would always leave some kind of collateral behind to guarantee you're going to pay back that loan. That could be your property, title to your property. That could be your jewelry, gold, or whatever you put up as collateral for your loan. This is an important thing I want you guys to hear. You checking your credit score. I'm going to get back to this. You checking your credit score, but I got news for you. If you got collateral, you don't need a credit score. The hell with a credit score. If I got a 99.9 ounce of gold in my local bank, do you think they're going to look for my credit score if I said I want to use that as collateral to make a loan? If I got a CD, let's say a $1,000 CD, and that CD is matured in that bank, with that bank, do you think they're going to have a problem holding on my CD over there? Do you think they're going to have a problem with that CD as collateral because I need $500 loan? No. They ain't about going to check my credit score when you have collateral. Problem is you don't. I told you were broke just by having to borrow money to get the basic things you need to live every day. Just by having to pay back that money tiny bits at a time, over years sometimes. You can't pay the man back what you borrowed from for 2 more years. It just means you poor as hell you're stretching out more and more, and you buy and you're selling more and more of your future to survive. Collateral, guys. Forget about your credit score. If you had some collateral, if you took jewelry down there, that when they looked at it, they saw the diamonds were real and the gold was real, and you say, I want to borrow some money and here's my collateral, you think they're going to check your credit score? Problem is, you ain't got no collateral. Anyway, collateral was what the way Jews were able to acquire property, because they couldn't go out and buy it. Nobody would sell property to a Jew. It was some kind of law or something. I don't know. But that's where it was in the Middle Ages. But how did Jews acquire so much? Well, if you didn't pay your loan, they kept the title to your land. They kept the jewelry, the candelabra, the gold this, the whatever that you gave them as collateral for that loan. By their contract, if you can't meet that requirement, if you can't pay that loan, they can keep that collateral. So, guys, I want you to know this, because people who claim they're Jews, who claim the Jewish religion, or those who were thought to be Jews, or understood to be of Jewish faith, they used to have something that terrifying to happen to them on a regular basis, seems, throughout Europe's history. It was something called a pogrom, a P-O-G-R-O-M, a pogrom, a pogrom. Do you know what a pogrom is? Do you have any idea what a pogrom is? Not a program, baby. A pogrom. P-O. I'll tell you what it is. I'll give you a perfect example. One day, all the townspeople in Poland, let's say, where these things used to happen, all the townspeople would be standing around talking about how deep in debt they are and how poor they are. And somebody would hold up their fingers and say, my wedding ring is down there at the Jewish quarter. See, the Jews live separately in their own quarter. I had to put it up collateral for a loan. Then another guy said, yeah, I had to put my property up for collateral. I'm going to lose that. And then another guy said, I'm going to lose my equipment, my horses that I put up for collateral, whatever. And as they sit around drinking and lamenting how deep in debt they were to the Jews, they get angry. They light torches. And they head to the Jewish quarter and burn the Jews out. And take their property back. This was called Jewish pogroms. And they happened on the regular throughout Europe. And oftentimes for that same reason. The people found themselves so deep in debt to the Jews that rather than try to pay their debt or lose their property or whatever collateral they put up, they said, frick it, and head for the Jewish quarter and burn it to the ground. That's the wandering Jew in Europe. It was called a pogrom, guys. Look it up. I told you that money was revolutionary. It represented a universal means of exchange that could make the marketplace go a lot smoother. Everybody's satisfied because everybody takes calorie shells in exchange for goods and services. And as long as everybody will take them, it's money. Then one day somebody decided to try to make money off money. Today, guys, there exists something called a money market. That's right. On Wall Street, money is bought and sold like pork bellies. Bought and sold. Why? Because what used to be a universal means of exchange is now a commodity. By definition, a commodity is anything produced for the sole purpose of sale or trade. And money has now entered the concept of the arena of commodity. You can buy and trade shekels and euros and rubles for dollars all day, and yen. In fact, the strength of the dollar is measured against other currencies. The strength of your currency depends on the strength of others. It could be up one day, it could be down the next. Not only that, guys, we all know by now, most of us who have any study and research into money and finance and the development of money over time, we all know now that the dollars, the paper money that we carry around in our pockets, are referred to have a note on them called Federal Reserve Note, indicating that they are a Federal Reserve, not a United States government, a Federal Reserve promissory note. IOU, promise to pay, promissory note. Look at your money and see if you have money or if you have something called a Federal Reserve note. If it's money, why don't you just call it money? But it's not. It's a promise to pay. It's a promissory note issued by the Federal Reserve for a dollar or 50 or 100. And some people call it fiat, F-I-A-T, fiat money. I often wonder what that was, so I had to look it up. They said that the United States currency, what we use as money every day, are Federal Reserve notes, promissory notes, IOUs, promises to pay a dollar, not a dollar. And that these money that's been declared legal tender by this government for paying debts has nothing backing it. No gold, no precious metals, as in the past. It's just printed paper. Expensive ink and expensive paper. I mean, you have to understand, when the Federal Reserve, which is not a part of the government, by the way, guys. Oh, yeah, it's contracted by the government. But the Federal Reserve is not a government entity. You don't vote for who's going to run the Federal Reserve, do you? Now, those are mostly bankers or people with banking and finance histories and connections. And they vote the head of their Federal Reserve. They nominate who they want to run for Federal Reserve. Let me put it that way. To lead the Federal Reserve. Some people say there's no money there, there's no real money there, so there's no reserve, and it's not a government entity, so it's not federal. People get a mistake. It's just a name, Federal Reserve. And they think it's a government entity. It's not. So I watched the Federal Reserve make money on a film one day, and they were printing this money. And the guy came out of the end, out of the warehouse, with two pallets, wooden pallets, stacked with money, One of them had $1 bills, all plastic, you know, the whole pallet was plastic wrap, but you could tell there were stacks and stacks of ones. And the other pallet had $50 bills, stacks and stacks of $50 bills, fresh cut from the printer. And they were all plastic wrapped around the entire pallet of stack of dollars and stacks of 50s. And on the show, the guy reached over to the dollars, and he took $1. And he said, with all that expensive paper and ink, and as many of you have printed here, how much did it take to print, did you calculate, would it print to print this $1 bill? The guy said, ink and paper all together, about 35 cents. And then he walked over to the $50 bill, and he pulled one of them off the stack. And he said, how much did it cost to print this $50 bill? And he said, with ink and paper, 35 cents. Fiat currency. Worth 35 cents. To print. Worth a dollar on the street. Like a drug. Worth 50 on the street. Money is a commodity. There's a money market, and it is bought and sold, but it ain't money anymore. The currency is just a Federal Reserve promissory note that can be exchanged for goods and services, but its stability is ridiculous, since it might buy something one day and you might need twice as much money to buy the same thing the next day. Because money is measured up against other people's currency on the market. You see, when you create a money as a commodity, you distort it. When you use money to make money, you distort it. The commercialization of money started with the fascists of Europe. Germany decided to float its money out there on a money market, or whatever it would bear, up against other currencies. The only way to keep the German mark up and powerful in terms of what it would return for you in terms of goods and services, Germany went on a war footing. And you will find that the most heated economy is one at war. And it seems that Hitler stayed on a war footing continuously. Not unlike the country I was raised in. Since the day I was a child, we were in or out of some war constantly. I don't remember a time when we weren't at war. So much like Adolf Hitler, our country also stays on a war footing. That kind of money for military and bombs and the like, and jets and planes and helicopters and all that, the defense spending, is what keeps this country afloat. Now, there's a lot of information, guys. There's a lot of stuff going around about crypto. Currencies, people creating their own currencies. And that has the potential to be revolutionary as well. But let me tell you something. If your currency, crypto or not, if your currency can be bought, traded, it's not money. If it can be bought with fiat money, then it must be fiat itself. If I can buy your Bitcoin with a promissory note from the Federal Reserve, then that's what your Bitcoin is worth. Debt. That's what an IOU is. That's what a promise to pay is. That's what a promissory note is. That's what a Federal Reserve note is. And that's what it says across the top of every paper money in your pocket. Every dollar in your pocket. It lets you know that this is a Federal Reserve note printed by the Federal Reserve and a promissory note to pay the bearer it has a stamp on it saying this note is good for goods and legal tender and for the paying of all debts with debt, with a promissory note, with an IOU. And so that funny money, that fiat money, that's just printed back here in the back room as much as we want, take it out when we get ready, it ain't worth but 35 cents a piece to us. It's worth hundreds of dollars to them. They'll do anything for it. So if you got a Bitcoin or some new cryptocurrency you're putting together about to come out, if I can buy it, if I can buy into it, if it can become part of an exchange rate, if you speculate with it on the market, I see a lot of people hoarding Bitcoins and the like. And why? So that they can trade in goods and services? No. They're not using Bitcoin to trade in goods and services. Come on. Most people that are hoarding Bitcoins are speculating. They're waiting for the price to go up so they can sell it for more money, for fiat money. Because if you can buy it and sell it for fiat money, then it must be fiat itself. I'm just saying. Money wasn't meant to be traded on the market. Money wasn't meant to be used to make more money with. In its natural and in its most useful and its most revolutionary form, it just served in the marketplace as a universal means of exchange. Now the bank is a pawn shop. If you think of the bank like a pawn shop, like a rating. If you got some collateral, Jack, you got some money. It's kind of like the title loan people. If you're willing to go in there and give them your title to your car as collateral, they're not going to check your credit rating. They're going to lend you some money. On the other hand, if you ain't got no collateral, to put up, you have to sell your future. Next month, and next month, and the month after that. And you can refinance that loan, you know. Get them payments down, you know. Get their credit score back up. Because if you get their credit score back up, guess what? You can borrow some more money. And I talked about it in my previous presentation as a culture where we live off of debt, where it's okay to be in debt. How about that? You probably never lived in a world, if you're young, where it wasn't all right to live in debt, owing people for everything you got, not owning anything. Like sharecropping. Look at my presentation on sharecropping and debt. So money, guys, was the presentation tonight. I want to holler about money again because people get the wrong idea of what money was supposed to be. It was cowrie shells. It was beads. It was a universal means of exchange accepted by each other in return for goods and services. It wasn't meant to be speculated on the market. It wasn't meant to be traded on the market like a can of soup. It wasn't meant to be a commodity. It wasn't meant to be used to make money by loaning it out for a profit in return. Tonight, I did this presentation tonight on money, and specifically on the loan, and to get kind of an understanding between the two. Because some people think money is the root of all evil. It became such when it was perverted. And I told you, the fascist countries of Europe, Germany, Hitler's Germany, went off any kind of gold or precious metal that their money represented, to a fact to their money representing nothing but the piece of paper it was written on and what it could gather for you in goods and services at the time based on its strength against other currencies. Mussolini's Italy, fascist, also took their money off any kind of precious metal standard representing any kind of thing of real value and printed out these 35-cent sheets of paper, some dollars, some 50s, and floated them out there on the market for whatever the market would bear. Richard Nixon in the 1960s took this currency, your dollar, off of any representation of anything of value, gold, silver, it didn't matter. The money represent nothing of value, just a piece of paper. And then this country did what the other fascists did. And they floated this money out there and created a money market where the buying and selling of money is the same as buying and selling pork bellies. These pieces of paper represent are not there to represent anything but themselves, piece of paper, and what's written on it. It ain't money. Don't get it twisted. It ain't money. And if you're creating something you call money, well, maybe you just call it currency. Let's just call it that. Cryptocurrencies, new currencies. I'll tell you what their value is. If I can buy it with a piece of fiat currency, if I can take American dollars, Federal Reserve notes, and purchase your Bitcoin, that's what your Bitcoin is, fiat. That's what it's worth, paper. And if I can speculate on the market with your Bitcoin, it ain't money. If I can loan it out for profit, it ain't money. It's a perversion of money. I want to thank everybody for listening in tonight. I want to do this little presentation on the loan. It seems to be prevalent in our society. And it getting us deeper and deeper indebted. As a way of life. Good credit. As a way of life. Why? Because you don't make enough money to buy what you need to buy. And you're scared to ask the people you work for to give you enough to buy what you need to buy without you having to go borrow money to get your car fixed or to get a decent car or house. Or medical care. These are the cost of living items. But you don't make the cost of living. And it's through you demanding that you do. Because your state, if you live in Tennessee and five other southern states, don't have a minimum wage. So they don't demand that you have the cost of living from your work. That you gain from your work the cost it takes to live. They could care less. There is no minimum wage in this state. Corporations need not worry. If there were no federal wage, they'd have no worries. They could pay whatever they like. And the state would be good with that. So I want to do a piece here on money and the perversion thereof, loaning of money for profit. It has an international impact as well as a local and state impact. Why? Because everybody's scared or something. Are you too weak? You've allowed your organizations of working people to get to so weakened that you can't stand up and say, oh no, we won't work for less than us. And your city, your state refuses to stand up for you and say, no, you cannot pay the workers in this state less than the minimum wage. That's the law. If you can't do that, then you can't do business here. Because the law says you cannot pay less than the minimum wage. And if you want to know why that's true, it's because this is the minimum it takes to live in the city, in the state. We've calculated the cost of living. And we've established a wage that minimally meets that cost. And you don't come into this city with your corporation and plan to pay anything less. Now, your state could take a stand, but it doesn't. Mine doesn't. Mine could care less. So it's left up to the people of my state to take a stand. And say, am I going to check my credit rating? Am I going to go down and see if I can get a loan? Or am I going to go to my employer and say, I can't live off this wage, sir? Join us in going to our city. And our state in demanding a minimum wage today that can meet the cost it takes to live in the city. As you know, this is a talk show. It's a call-in show. I'm sorry. And so I do make I do make part of the show available for call-ins. I also am working on my chat room, so slow coming up. And if you have a question or comment, you can put it right into my chat. I'll deal with it in the chat, or I'll deal with it on the air if you like. My phone number is area code 714-816-4765. That's 714-816-4765. 714-816-4765. And you come on live with your question, comment, or concern. This is your time to shine. You've been listening to Revolutionary Life, right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Gary, and I'm here every weekday night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. You never know what the subject might be. There is a follow button on your site, if you upper right-hand corner usually. If you see it, you click on it, and you may get a heads up on the title of the upcoming shows. I want to thank everybody for listening in. Tonight I dealt with money. I've dealt with economics and money before in some previous presentations that you might only listen to. I go into a little bit of depth of the history of the development of concept of money, as you look around the world and people doing different things in terms of trading goods and services and making that process go smoother, easier. Right. And that's from the Native Americans of this company to the people of Turkey to the Middle East as well as the Europe. All right. And I go into a little bit more on the loaning of money. I mentioned to you that Christians at one point could not loan money for a profit. Jews had no such restriction. They were the first to get into the loaning of money, for money. Put in a unique situation, by the way, because for some reason or another, in Europe, in those days, Jews could not purchase property. In a Christian-dominated world, the Jews could not purchase property. Jews acquired property, however, through loaning money and the use of collateral. And I told you, all you folks checking your credit scores, people who have collateral don't bother. Like I said, if I had a 99.9 ounce of gold and a bank vault in my local bank, and I wanted to come down and borrow $500 cash or $5,000 cash, do you think they would check my credit score? if I took jewelry up in there and they saw the diamonds were real. And I said, I want to make a loan and here's my collateral. Do you think they would check my credit score? If I had a CD, a civil certificate, a certificate of deposit in that bank, say $1,000 CD held at that bank to its maturity, and I wanted to borrow $500, do you think I'd have a problem checking my credit score? Well, so the bank is just like a pawn shop. You can go in and pawn something. You can pawn your wedding ring on hope of buying them back one day. So it's the same thing when you go into a bank. If you worried about your credit score, check and see if you have anything you can put up as collateral. And if you don't, you can always do it the old-fashioned way. Way everybody else is doing. Borrow money. Pay some notes. And stretch them out over 2 or 3 years if you can. 36 month loan. 24 month loan. 48 month loan. It's just to close the gap between what you earn for your labor and the things you need for your life and livelihood, your life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. I did say my lines were open. This is a call-in show. If you have a question or comment, you can call right in and go right onto the air. I also have a chat room. You can log into my chat and leave a question or comment there if you like.
Shall we begin?
This is not a drill. Is that all you got?
Let's begin.
What up?
Oh, for sure.
You've been listening to Revolutionary Life right here on Block Talk Radio. This is your host, Gary, and thank you for listening in to another night of Block Talk Radio, Revolutionary Life. And tonight we did a little bit on the money and the loan. If you missed it, you can always pick this up on the archives. In fact, every time you log into my site, whether I'm on live or not, anytime, day or night, you can always pick up my episodes. The ones you've missed in the past, they're all there on demand. So look, feel free to come to the site at any time, day or night. That'll be me when you click that episode to play. And so you can always get this presentation or a presentation later on through that on-demand list of episodes that are published right on my site. All right. I want to thank you again for listening in. To those of you who listen in, thanks again. And I will see you tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. In the meantime, I want you to stay in the moment. I want you to stay in the now. I want you to stay in the real and quit playing games in your head. Don't live your life like what you think things are. Open your eyes, ears, nose, mouth, feel, taste, and touch so that you'll know what things are. You don't hear me. Stay in the moment, and you'll be fearless, and you can live without doubts. And I'll see you tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. Good night, and thank you for listening in.